Greeting friends and fellow Freedom Screamers. It's Eric, the Freedom Screamer in upstate New York on this fine, what is it, Wednesday, May 27th. I'd like to talk about, what do you say to the police if they approach you during this situation for whatever reason they may? The first thing is, now, a lot of this is going to pertain to New York in particular, but also other states as well. When we get into the public officers law, there's 15 states, I believe it's 15 out of the 50 that have a public officer's law on the books, which require that all public officers, that means police, judges, district attorneys, troopers, sheriffs, they all must have filed what's called an oath and a bond filed with their county clerk and or the Secretary of State. In New York, if they fail to file that oath and bond on public record with the county clerk, their position is deemed vacant. That means they're not even operating as a law as a public officer. They're just pretending. No joke. They got the uniform, they get the car, they got a gun, but they have no authority, no standing if they don't comply with their own law, with their own state law. They're out enforcing state statute, state code, state quote-unquote law, and they're not complying with it. None of the troopers have their oath and bond filed. I checked with the New York State Police Attorney's Office. That's the attorneys that represent the New York State Police if they go into court to sue or be sued. And I also checked with the lead attorney for the New York State Comptroller's Office because I was told, go check over there. It might be there. The oath and the bond for all these troopers that are driving around. And guess what? Neither the state comptroller nor the state attorney for the New York State Police are in possession or compliance with the New York State Public Officers Law, Section 11, Section 20, and Section 30, three different chapters in the New York State Codes, Rules, and Regulations pertain to the Public Officers Law, Chapter 11, Chapter 20, and Chapter 30. And in Chapter 30 of the New York Public Officers Law, it specifically says, I'm going to paraphrase it because I don't have the lengthy quote in front of me, but it basically says this in section 30.1 subsection H. It says if the public officer fails to file their oath and bond, that means that they don't do it within 30 days after starting their term. Okay, so they swear in, they take their oath. I swear to uphold the Constitution and blah blah blah. And if they don't file that oath and bond within 30 days after beginning their new job, then their position is deemed vacant. And the section actually says creation of vacancies. So their position is literally dissolved if they don't file their oath and bond within 30 days, and none of them do it. We got two judges in a row removed from a case for Wayne Mosier here in upstate New York, and they had to drop the case because they were basically running out of judges. The judges weren't even complying with the New York State Public Officers Law. I had Judge Sandra Cameron saying, well, I think the village filed it for me. I said, that's not good enough. You think we need proof of this? You cannot, jurisdiction cannot be claimed. It has to be proven. I was nice about it, and she gave me about 10 minutes. They waited until the very end of the traffic court to bring up me and Wayne Mosier, and Wayne was up there for a code violation. Hit too much stuff in his yard, apparently. Way up on a hill in the middle of nowhere, out in the country, in upstate New York. Can't even see his front yard from the road. Yet there's the code officer up there because, you know, they need to steal people's money. The government can't produce anything, so they need to leech money like a bunch of ticks and fleas and wolves and sharks. They need to leech money out of the producing economy, which is you and me. So if those filings aren't made within 30 days, the position of the deputy or the cop or the trooper or the judge or the district attorney, vacant. The position's vacant. So if you cite that statute in a simple piece of paper, and I did mine by hand, I ain't no stinking attorney. I don't have a typewriter. I just barely can use a computer. I just got one the other day. I've been years without a computer. I wrote my motion up by hand, motion for dismissal, based on the judge's failure to comply with the public officer's law. And if the court and the police aren't complying with the law, how in good name can they expect us to, you know, demand that we do it? So there's a good start. So what do you say first when a cop comes up to you? The first thing I would recommend is there an emergency, sir or ma'am? Is there when they come up to you, hey, excuse me, can I talk to you for a minute? Is there an emergency? And they're going to have to immediately say no, because, you know, unless there is an emergency, then obviously this does not apply. I'm talking about a cop coming up and hassling you for minding your own business with or without a mask, with or without social distancing, all that garbage that's not law, that are nothing but orders from the governor's office, which have no standing. There's not a statute with an enacting clause, an actual statute passed by the legislature, and I would argue even most of them are null and void and invalid because they're not constitutionally based. So the first thing you want to say is there an emergency? And they're going to have to, 9 out of 10 times, admit that there's no emergency. Okay, so the next question, they'll say, no, I just want to ask you, or I just want to talk to you about, and you say, whoa, wait, if there's no emergency, then who gave you permission to speak to me? Ask them the question, is there an emergency? Who gave you permission to speak to me? Say it, be nice and be polite, but start putting them back on their heels. Who is there an emergency? Who gave you permission to speak to me? Where is your supervisor today? Can I have the name of your supervisor, please? Because when we get to court, he's going to have to show up and he's going to have to write an affidavit. Your supervisor's going to have to testify. They're going to be held accountable under Title 42, Section 1983. So, and about that point, they're going to start realizing, ooh, maybe they bit off more than they can chew. So if it continues, then your next time, after you've asked your initial questions, where's the emergency? Is there an emergency? Where is it? Who gave you permission to speak to me? Because my time is valuable. And if there's not an emergency, I'm going to have to bill you for my time, officer. I'll send an invoice to you and your supervisor and the county executive. You held me up for 45 minutes here. I charge $60 an hour. You owe me $40. Okay? And send them an invoice and wait to get paid. It most likely won't pay you, but it'll send a really good message and they'll never mess with you again. And it'll keep them prevent them from jerking around with the next person because they're not going to know who's going to stand up, who knows, you know, who has the guts. It's not really who knows. It's not really knowledge. It's more just courage. And keeping it simple. Don't get all too fancy with them, okay? You're not going to go on for as long as I'm going on here. I'm trying to, you know, get everything out there and educate. I'm going to have to, fully explain and maybe repeat a few times so to drive it home for people. So, but when you're in that situation, simple. Keep it simple, sweetheart. K-I-S-S. Simple. Everything you say is potentially a trap for you and a loophole for them. All the laws and statutes and codes, rules, regulations are all set up by the attorneys to place traps for us and loopholes for them. That means little places where you can slip, not dot an I, cross a T, and have to worry about, you know, them saying, oh, look at you, you didn't do this right or you didn't do that right. Doing things not right aren't a crime. So is there an emergency? Who gave you permission to speak to me? If there's no emergency, I'm going to have to bill you for my time. Could I have the name of your supervisor, please? Could we get them down here to talk about this? Because you're wearing a gun, sir, and you're approaching me when there's no emergency and I'm not under investigation. Or am I? You could say, am I under investigation? Am I under arrest? That's the tack that some people will take. I know a gentleman who was approached by the cops, and they said, hey, let me talk to you. And he said, hey, am I under arrest? And they said, no, we just want to talk to you about something. And he said, am I under investigation? And they said, no. And he said, okay, then this conversation is over. Have a nice day. So that's one tack. I prefer to nail them down a little more and get toward that public officer's law if you're in New York, because knowing that 90% of the cops and judges, probably more like 97%, don't, except the higher judges usually comply because there's a lot more at risk. But the lower ones just say, screw it. Nobody ever holds them to it. So I like to go the public officer's law angle. If you're in one of the 15 states that has a public officer's law that requires the cops to file an open bond, because if they haven't done it, they're in violation of their own statute and their own codes, their own laws, and it's a slam dunk. So the am I under investigation, am I under arrest is, you know, is kind of open-ended and nebulous, and you're not really nailing them. I like to nail them with something specific and just say, hey, you know, are you in compliance with the New York Public Officers Law Chapter 30, which requires you to file an open bond? If I call the county clerk tomorrow morning and your open bond's not there, it's gonna have to be reported to your supervisor and the head of the state police in Albany. And I'm going to file complaints, and I'm going to file notices, and I'm going to file affidavits, and I'm going to file an invoice for my time. And you can be really nice about it, and you can, you know, be gentle, you know, in their face. I'm not saying scream at freedom in their face. I'm saying, you know, do the dance, be tactful, you know, proportional. You know, if they're coming up to you, nice, be nice back. If they get a little more bossy, you know, then you can stand your ground a little more. Don't ever fight them. That ticket that you get, or that trip to jail for a night and get out in the morning, that's 8 out of 10 times that can be your Willy Wonka's golden ticket there. I know John McTernan sued Erie County. I believe it was Erie County. I forget whether it was Erie County, New York, or Erie County, Pennsylvania. I think it was Erie County, New York. And he was basically arrested for protesting against abortion on the front sidewalk in front of an abortion mill. And he was arrested by the police. He sued for $75,000 and he won the lawsuit. So it sometimes, and sometimes you have to take it to appeal because the lower courts will just rubber stamp guilty verdicts left, right, and center. Always file that appeal. So even if you do get the ticket and you do go into court and you do lose your first battle, and we'll talk about court later, but, you know, your first interaction is going to be with the cops. So that's why we want to get that out there right now. Like, what's your first potential nightmare? Here comes the guy in the uniform with the gumballs on his car saying, excuse me, with your mask and you're standing too close, blah, 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 whatever garbage they're going to spew out of their mouth. You know, first thing is, hey, is there an emergency? No, we just want to ask you about... Okay, well, then who gave you permission to speak to me? And you could kind of giggle and laugh about it and say, you know, this is kind of funny. You're coming up to me with a gun and there's no emergency. Okay, so then it's, are you in compliance with the public officer's law? And then that, okay, so now let's pretend you're in a state with no public officer's law. Then what do you do? Okay, so first thing I would say, you know, is obviously emergency. Who gave you permission to speak to me? Okay, and... So they start talking to you, well, you're not wearing, let's pick the mask. Okay, well, you're not wearing a mask, and you're standing all close to these other people. There's 20 people. You can't have 20 people, only 10. You say, okay, well, show me where that law exists with an enacting clause. And that's your operative word. You want to use the word enacting clause, E-N-A-C-T-I-N-G. It's a legal term. It's a standard that has to be met for a law to actually become law. And we can get... into the what's the difference between a law and a statute and a code and a rule and a regulation. They all have just subtle different meanings. When I say law, I don't always concede that their laws are really true, valid, just law. But that's what they call it. So the word can be used interchangeably, but ultimately what we're talking about are codes, statutes, rules, and regulations. The ultimate law should be the Constitution. Always that's the standard, and it says it in Article 2, Section 6. The Supremacy Clause says the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So, if you don't have a public officer's law to mention, and the officer in question may be in compliance with it on a rare occasion, almost never are they in compliance with it. So try that first. If you have no public officer's law, you want to ask them to show you the law that they're enforcing. So let's say it's a mask. Okay, mask, show me the law. With an enacting clause. And they'll say, well, it hasn't been actually passed by a law yet. It's an executive order. Really? Well, that would apply only to the executive branch of government and its employees. And they say, well, they're going to have them on that one because they're not going to be able to respond to it. They're going to, they may try to say, well, no, it applies to everyone. And you say, absolutely, it does not. Show me the contract where I consented to be an agent of the state under its authority and orders. Show me the contract. Now, the reason I bring up the word contract, people, is because almost everything that they're going to be adjudicating here, unless you assault somebody, is going to be a civil action. And Cuomo has said it. Trump has said it. The mayor of New York has said it. The county executive for Erie County, where Buffalo is, has said it. Civil. We're going to have a civil penalty. We're going to have civil action. They're going to go after you commercially under the Uniform Commercial Code, UCC law. So now once they start executing civil action and civil judgments, you're under the Uniform Commercial Code. Now, two things on that. It's really bad because you want to be under the Constitution, not somebody's corporate UCC law. But the good part is, under UCC law, there has to be a contract entered into fully informed consent by both parties, meaning the person who is the aggressor, the cop coming up to the, and that you or me standing there with no mask, no social distancing, doing our thing and being free. So there has to be a specific contract between both of those parties, the cop and the general public. And any member of the general public, like myself, I never entered into a contract with the police to be an agent of the state. I never entered into a contract to obey orders from the dictator of New York. I never entered into a contract with any for you to approach me now and talk with me. I'm not interested in entering into any contract with you. Now, when you get to that point, they're going to be really stuck because if they have no criminal action against you and they're not enforcing law, simply orders, they're kind of stuck. So, now, should it go further and they try to arrest you? Always go to two things. Number one, go to court in large numbers and insist on going to court. Don't take a plea, don't pay the fine. Get into court. That's your big day. I know it's scary to some people, but once you get over it once or twice, it comes easy and you want to be there. That's where you can make the biggest impact. You go into a court with people, you petition to video the proceedings. They'll usually deny the cameras in the court. You pass out jury nullification flyers all around the courthouse, in the lobby, in the bathroom, out on the front steps. Don't block any doorways so they can't get you for interfering with governmental administration. But just wander around handing out jury nullification flyers. It'll completely freak them out. They'll never want to see you again. I've had it happen. I had a judge in one courtroom say, get him, get out, go, take your... I walked in a secondary courtroom. I was observing in one, and during a break, I went into one of the other courtrooms just to see what was going on. I was not familiar with the case or the people in it. And I walked in with my jury nullification T-shirt, big letters, jury nullification. And the judges can't stand jury nullification because it's when the jury says, I'm nullifying the law by finding someone not guilty who may have broken that law. Okay, so you get that. So if a law is bad and somebody is being brought up on charges of breaking that law, then you could say not guilty. One of the big cases was a marijuana case and a cannabis case in New Hampshire where the guy had sold, I don't know, 10 pounds of weed. And the people, realized that that's not really any type of major crime we want to put somebody in prison for. Nobody was hurt from the sale of a big bag of hemp, cannabis, whatever. And the jury said not guilty. Even though it was clear he had the weed, he had made the sale, it was no big deal and it's not a crime. It's really not a crime. There's no victim. Common law is what this republic was founded on, and under common law, if there's no specific victim, like if he didn't hurt somebody directly that you could show, hey, that person, was physically injured by that you selling that product. And we're not even talking about consuming it. We're just talking about the exchange. So, the jury said not guilty, and they nullified the law by their verdict in court. Okay, so is that clear to people? Look up jury nullification. You can research it yourself. It's been around for hundreds of years. There's even a case from 1972 called U.S. versus Dougherty, Dougherty, which says I'm going to try to get it close. It says the pages of history shine on instances of the jury disregarding instructions from the judge. In other words, when the judge says, you have to find him guilty if the case is proven by the state and if the district attorney makes his case, it doesn't matter whether you like the law or agree with it, you have to find that person guilty if the state makes its case and they prove that the person actually did what they're saying. Well, not true. You can two things. You can disregard instructions of the judge pursuant to U.S. versus Doherty, and you can exercise jury nullification without saying that you're doing that, without explaining it to the other jurors in the room, and without justifying your position. You can say, I just think the guy's not guilty. I don't care. I'm not explaining myself. I'm not going to send this guy or girl to prison. This is why we need good, patriotic people on the inside of these juries. When you get a jury letter, don't ignore it. Don't try to blow it off and evade it and run from it. We need you to get on those juries. Now, if it's somebody who clearly committed murder and it's beyond any of your reasonable doubt, you do what you got to do. Obviously, I'm not talking about murderers, rapists, and, you know, people stealing cars and stuff like that. I'm talking about people like Shane Bennett, who got caught with guns in his house, and because he had a minor felony 11 years before when he was in his early 20s. He had a small drug thing when he was, you know, fresh out of high school. And 11, 12, 13, I think it was 13 years later, he's in his mid-30s, totally, you know, reformed, totally, you know, normal guy, wife, kids, house in the country, job every day he went through early in the morning. And the cops got wind that he had a gun collection in the house. And because he had a previous felony, they brought the case forth that he was a convicted felon in possession of a firearm and needed to go to prison. Apparently, the sheriff's department refused over five times to serve the warrant because they knew that Shane Bennett had never done anything. He wasn't accused of committing any action with the guns. He wasn't brandishing the guns. He didn't rob anybody with the guns. He didn't threaten anybody. He wasn't using his guns improperly. He wasn't shooting them off in the yard near the neighbors. Nothing. They were just sitting in a giant box, old farmer's gun collection, with, like, historic pieces in there and stuff that you don't even use. And sure enough, the state police special operations and response team kicks in his door 2 days before Thanksgiving, drags his wife out of bed naked, holds the kid at gunpoint with an automatic rifle, threatened to shoot the dog who's cowering in the corner, the whole nine yards, the whole disgusting thing. And I went there and passed out jury nullification flyers, and it was there that I went in one of the other courtrooms, and the judge said, get that guy out of my courtroom. Take your jury nullification shirt and get out. get out. He wanted me out of his courtroom. So, hey, so, long and short, you want to keep the system off your back? You want them to run from you? Wear a jury nullification t-shirt, pass out jury nullification flyers at the courthouse. Oh, they'll never want to see you again. You'll be on the short list of people they don't want to F with ever. And the police will get the message, too. Don't bring that guy into my courtroom. I don't want to see him here. I don't want to have anything to do with him with the jury nullification getting out to the people in my courtroom. So it's a great self-protection mechanism as well. This is not the reason that I do it, but it's a nice byproduct. It's a nice benefit to be on the, you know, the no-go list. They're not going to want to bring the people in who are really going to resist and do things. So you got to get a little aggressive with the flyers and the t-shirts and the videotaping everything. That's another thing they hate is the camera. Make sure you get their all their information on video. So back to what we do. So if you don't have a public officer's law in your state, and 15 states do have it, so look it up. New York has it. Nevada has it. Oh, I don't have the list in front of me, but you can find it online. So if you don't have a public officer's law, once again, we're back to show me the law. Show me an enacting clause. Orders do not qualify. And that'll usually get them right there. If they say, well, the orders, these are orders from the governor, we say, hey, those orders are not law, and I do not have to comply with orders. Only agents of the executive branch of the state have to comply with those orders. In other words, the state police, the people who work are employed by the state, anybody under that, anybody who takes a paycheck from the state, anybody who signed that on that dotted line with the state, that's their contract. They're locked in. I'm not. I haven't signed any contract with the idiot state, and I'm not under their I'm not under their orders. So, now the third component to this is you're not a citizen, you're an American national. As soon as you consent to being a citizen, and we've talked about this in my other blogcasts, as soon as you consent to being a citizen, you are beholden and you are held to account by those codes, statutes, rules, and regulations put forth by that city-state that you're a citizen of. So if you're a citizen of the federal U.S. corporation called the United States LLC, then whatever the United States LLC and its CEO, Donald Caesar, has to say, you must do. So, and I don't believe for a minute Trump is on our side. He's playing both sides of the fence. I knew when he came out and tore the governor of Georgia a new you-know-what for reopening, after saying he wanted everything to be reopened and he was for reopening, as soon as the governor of Georgia said, okay, we're going to do it, he said, I think this is a really bad idea. This is very irresponsible. Georgia shouldn't be opening. What? Why is he all of a sudden coming out and saying, no real? You want to know why? Because as soon as Georgia reopened and everybody sees it, nobody's getting sick, there's no spike in the numbers, nobody's dropping dead, there's no real pandemic. There may be a coronavirus, but there's no pandemic. Absolutely not. If there was, there'd be a huge spike in the numbers from the barbecue on Memorial Day 2 or 3 days ago right here in Belfast, New York. Small town America, hundreds of people over the course of the barbecue. When I was there, there was at least 50 people, between 50 and 70 people, because there was some mingling around in the parking lot and outside the VFW. But, I mean, all right up there in front of the just concession stand, just like a normal day at the ballpark or at the barbecue, all lined up, nobody standing away from each other, nobody paranoid, nobody wearing an idiot's mask, and nobody sick and nobody dying. And guess what? No spike in the numbers. If there was a real pandemic, you'd see people getting sick everywhere. Because, number one, nobody's been complying along the way. And, number two, they're not now. So I don't see, with 50% of the people wearing a mask at a local grocery store, and 50% not, there would have to be a serious, serious spike, a serious fluctuation and something, a ripple. Nope. Everything's going away. Everything's going down. Numbers are getting good. Hospitals aren't overwhelmed anymore. We're all set. Now, along the way, nobody complied, or many people did not comply. And right now, even fewer people are complying. So it would have to be massively spiking the numbers if there was a real pandemic. I'm not saying there's not a real virus. I'm just saying there's not a real pandemic. So, back to the matter at hand. You've got your public officer's law. You've got your so if you don't have a public officer's law in your state and you ask them to show you the law and they say, no, all we have is orders, and you say those orders only apply to you guys as agents of the state. They don't apply to the general public. And if they try to say they do, say, well, sir, I'm not a citizen. I'm an American national, and you're out of your jurisdiction. Tell them they're out of their jurisdiction. And then if they continue to push the matter, it will be up to you whether you want to take the pitch and get a lawsuit out of it, or try to avoid it, comply. But whatever happens, whether it's an arrest or a citation, take it into court. Don't try to avoid court. Try to get into court. That's your best place you can be. I've met the greatest people in court. I've spread so much awareness. I've learned so much in court. And once again, you're going to be on the list of people they don't ever want to see if you're making a difference with the jury nullification flyers, the jury nullification T-shirt, just the very things that the court can't stand and that they don't want to see. Because if you brought justice back into the courts and took out the profit, the courthouses would be, it'd be like tumbleweed and cobwebs, okay? They'd be sitting there idle, which is what they should be doing, sitting there idly, not doing all this business on people's freedom under statutory UCC law. So, hi, sir, is there an emergency? No, I just want to talk to you something. Well, then who gave you permission to speak to me? Is your supervisor happen to be around? Well, no, we just want to make sure that everybody's, well, listen, I have no contract with you. I'm not interested in contracting with you. Can you show me your public officers, your duly filed public officers, your duly filed oath and bond pursuant to the public officers law? and they'll say, oh, geez, well, I don't know about that. I'm not a lawyer. Well, you know, if you don't know the law, how can you be out here enforcing it, officer? Okay? Show me the contract where I consented with you to do any type of business or obey any type of orders. So you're out of your jurisdiction, sir. Now, meanwhile, you're videotaping everything. And then if they continue to take it and try to write you up a citation, you can do one of two things. You can either sign it and write, offer to contract refused across the front of it and hand it back to them, or refuse to sign it and say, I can't sign anything. I don't sign any legal documents without fully researching and fully checking with, you know, my legal department. Just leave it at that and tell them you have a legal department. And then feel free to contact us at courtroomwatch.com. Oh, courtroomwatch@gmail.com, that is. Now, be advised, I don't carry an attorney's bar card, but I can assist people with legal research and education to point you in the direction to defend yourself along with your friends. Now, that's the next thing. If you get into court, you have to go with people. Don't go alone. Go in even if it's just two or three people. Better to have 10 or 20. We went into Shane Bennett's 70. It blew the judge's mind. He said, where's everybody going? Isn't there any more court? Nope, everybody here was for Shane. That's the only one that he had on the books tonight. The judge was blown away, and it sent a message through the entire legal and judicial community to the point where the district attorney, Michael Pantillo, decided he was not going to run for re-election, and we basically ended his career. As soon as that was over, he was off to whatever other evil that he's going to do. Michael Pantillo was the district attorney of Ontario County, New York, who prosecuted Shane Bennett for having a farmer's gun collection in his house 11 years after a minor drug conviction when he was a young man. So just goes to show you the criminals, our legal system has nothing to do with justice. It has everything to do with profit and control. So these are ways to deal with the police when they approach you. Hello, sir, is there an emergency? Hello, can we get your supervisor here? Do you have your public officers? Do you have your oath and bond filed pursuant to the public officer's law? Are you in compliance with the public officer's law? That's a good question. You can answer that. Are you in compliance with the public officer's law? Well, what do you mean by that? Well, you're required to file an oath and bond with the county clerk and or the secretary of state. Can I see that just to make sure that you're operating legally and lawfully? Okay, now there's a real, and you're going to be like, So, and that's a real nice way to put it. You're not getting confrontational, you're not getting in their face, you're not calling them any bad names. Of course, you want to videotape everything. You have a right to do that in public. And if you do have to go to court, let us know. Go with a group of people. Go to courtroomwatch.com and download the jury nullification letter. Just scroll down and you'll see it. It says, copy the jury nullification letter. Copy this before they block it again. How do I know they blocked it? They did it while I was being interviewed on Hagman & Hagman in front of 450,000 of their listeners. Mr. Hagman, Doug Hagman, said, Eric, I'm getting some emails from my listeners that say, your jury nullification letter is going to a 404 error. I said, oh, joy. I just have to read it here on air because I was on being interviewed about my jury nullification work and things I do with the court. So go download. It's in a PDF file. Super simple. Go to courtroomwatch.com. Scroll down till you see jury nullification letter. Click on that PDF file. Download it and print it out. Then make 100 copies. Pass them out to everybody you know. You could take back the entire county that you live in if people in that county get on the same page with jury nullification. Why? Because when you get into court, you've got an automatic victory. Back in the days, the colonial times, before the revolution, the British were passing all kinds of obscene and obscure and ridiculous arbitrary statutes, taking people's money, taking their firearms, taking troops quartering in their house. A British soldier could come up to you and steal anything off you that he wanted to, pretty much similar to what the police do in many jurisdictions today. And the colonists, just when they'd get on juries for people who were brought up on trial, they would just start voting not guilty. And they were exercising jury nullification. Not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. Pretty soon, guess what? They weren't bringing any more cases into court. They weren't arresting people. And the British stopped passing these idiotic statutes. So, I'm going to check back in with you in a few minutes with more. I want people to digest where we went. And it's Eric the Freedom Screamer, over and out.